Podcast today's show at rte.ie/todaywithseanorourke.
Tomorrow there will be exactly 100 campaigning days left to the UK's general election. It takes place on Friday, the 7th of May, or on the 7th of May. And from London, I'm joined by Quentin Peel, commentator with the Financial Times and a senior fellow at Chatham House think tank. Good morning to you, Quentin.
Good morning, Sean.
In fact, I don't think the 7th is a Friday, but in any event, if I have it right, it's a Thursday. But nonetheless,
usually is.
before we talk about the UK election, because you're an old Berlin hand, I thought maybe I'd ask you how the results in Greece that we've been following overnight are being viewed in the German capital, because a lot of concentration is going to be how Mrs. Merkel will respond to the arrival at the table at the summit and elsewhere of Mr. Tsipras.
Yeah, indeed. And I think they're being viewed inevitably with some dismay, although I don't think they're surprised. They were expecting this result. I think they know clearly there's going to have to be some form of renegotiation. And the question is this going to be another round of substantial debt forgiveness? Because the problem for Greece is that half of all the bailout money it's getting is going straight back to service its debts. So I think that's the challenge for Mrs. Merkel. I've seen a couple of statements come out straight away expressing dismay if the new government goes back on or halts the whole reform process on the grounds that, hey, they are actually turning the corner, as I think I heard the debate in your own studios about the Irish economy. There has been some improvement. It's been bloody painful. But, hey, don't throw it all away.
Yes, but how far are the Germans, do you think, prepared to push the new Greek government? I mean, is there a point beyond which they're not prepared to go in terms of providing relief and say, look, if that means they're back to the drachma and out of the euro, well, so be it. We can handle it.
I really don't think they want to do that. I think this has been a very consistent line from Angela Merkel, that she said, I do not want to force the Greeks out. However, they've got to do their porridge, so to speak. Now, it's going to be a much tougher negotiation. These people are coming in. They're going to be able to say, we've got a popular mandate. It was 36% of the vote. But nonetheless, it is a popular mandate. They're very clearly the largest party. And it's going to be tougher for the Germans to be quite so adamant. But nonetheless, I don't think that it's going to be an easy negotiation at all, because at the end of the day, a huge part of the problem does lie in Greece. The problem in Greece has been that government after government has failed to shake up the system, root out corruption, and get a better institutional structure. So a big part of the problem is still in Greece.
Now, moving back to where you are, to the UK, and as I say, 101 days to the general election there, David Cameron talking about offering tax cuts to the middle classes primarily, but it's proving to be a difficult enough exercise, if not least for the media, to get them all properly lined up in the starting gates, particularly where, for instance, the idea of debates is concerned.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a very different situation to the one they're all used to. This is not, in effect, a two-party struggle any longer. It's a 6-7-8-party struggle, and it means the mathematics are all very difficult. Nobody's likely to emerge with a clear majority. And how do you organise a debate when you've got 6 or 7 parties all scrambling to get on the telly together?
Well, for starters, David Cameron refused to agree to anything which involved the exclusion of the Greens. And now, lo and behold, the TV companies have turned around and said, well, actually, yeah, you can have the Greens in there. So are you coming to the party, or at least to the party political debate? So what do you think he's going to do next?
I think he'll probably have to back down. He doesn't want these debates to happen, because the incumbent always comes off worst, really. It's a great chance for the opposition to shine. But having said that, he would look dreadful if, having made his condition, the condition's been met, he didn't actually accept it. What's been fascinating, though, has been actually the benefit to the Greens that have come out of all this from being the odd one out, so to speak. They've seen a surge in membership, which has actually taken them above the Liberal Democrats and above UKIP, the Eurosceptics, to have a larger membership, which is the grounds on which they say now, right, we've got to appear on telly.
Yeah, but side by side with that, you have people like Nigel Dodds, who is the senior DUP, Democratic Unionist politician at Westminster, saying, well, if the Greens are in there and we've got 8 MPs, why can't we be there too?
I hear that, and indeed the the compromise put down by the television companies, which does include the SNP but doesn't include the DUP or any party from Northern Ireland, is I would say, problematic. On the other hand, surely there's a logical argument that says if you're only standing in Northern Ireland or Wales or Scotland, then let's have debates that focus entirely on the agenda locally, and only those countries go national who actually are bringing
right.
up candidates
and
everywhere.
Once they manage to get the seven party or whatever numbers of rings there number of rings there are in the circus, will they finally get down to a head to head between David Cameron and Miliband?
Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, I think the idea will be there will be one head-to-head, and then is the idea there may be one three-party go with allowing the Liberals in? That might look a bit weird. They really will have to have, though, the seven-party one. And will you learn anything from that? They'll all be scrambling to have their say.
Meanwhile, UKIP, which, again, has been sweeping across the political firmament something like a comet in recent times, they've hit a bad patch, though, haven't they? Particularly in the last week or so.
They have, yes. I think that what's happening to UKIP is this is actually quite a disorganised party with people all scrambling to get a bit of the limelight and with odd ideas. And they've come under a lot more scrutiny recently, so people are looking very hard at what they stand for. Partly that, and partly there are a lot of personalities. So they've had a very high-profile resignation now of one of their members of the European Parliament, and not just anyone, but the one guy, Amjad Bashir, who's a Pakistani origin, so he's the proof that they're not a racist party, and he's very prominently walked out.
Yes, and then they've had to put manners on another spokesperson who said, well, actually, yeah, we should represent the bigots as well. He was a guy who was hired to do their PR for them. And I think they had difficulty with one of their organising secretaries as well, and also a recently elected MP. So I suppose it's no surprise that Farage has reduced his predictions now to something, what, in the order of five seats. That's not the kind of talk he would have been indulging in just a few months ago.
No, perhaps not. I think he's realistic, too, about the way the British electoral system works. The first-past-the-post system makes it incredibly difficult for them to pick up, I would say, more than five or six seats.
Now, what about the two big parties? And I think you had a poll yourselves last week, or at least the analysis was that it's looking like the most unpredictable election for almost a century. What makes it so? Is it the plethora of parties, or the fact that there are these doubts, particularly about Ed Miliband, whether he is prime ministerial enough?
I think fundamentally it is the plethora of parties, and it's the fact that they will play out differently in different places. So there are going to be some constituencies where, say, a constituency with a lot of students in it, the Liberal Democrat vote will collapse, the Green vote may go up. Will the Labour Party suddenly find they're losing power there? But in other seats, it's UKIP that'll be taking votes again away from both Conservatives and Labour, and so it's very unpredictable even at constituency level, and I think that's the primary thing. The second thing is, okay, Miliband hasn't looked that impressive thus far, but I'm not sure if that's going to really play out at the end. You would normally expect a Conservative Party, after one period in office and the economy picking up, to come back with a clear mandate, and that's actually David Cameron's problem. So he's equally got a problem of not delivering. The two big parties are both short of a majority.
Yes, and Cameron today expected to announce, it may have happened for all I know, I don't think it has just yet, £7.2 billion of unfunded tax cuts, with middle earners set to be the biggest gainers. Now, how does Miliband trump that? And also, not forgetting Nick Clegg, his Cameron's partner in government, they seem to be getting quite seriously squeezed as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's getting a bit nasty, actually, with an awful lot of unfunded promises coming out from places. One of the most dangerous, actually, is the Chancellor's policy to allow pensioners to raid their pension funds. And they're rushing this through so that people will suddenly have a bit of cash to spend on April the 6th, just a month before the elections. And the pensions industry is tearing its hair out because they say, we're not ready for all this. It's just an election, nice little bonus so they get the pensioners to vote Tory.
Now, just in regard to this pledge of tax cuts for the middle earners, what is the Labour Party expected to do by way of a counter-proposal? Or is it going to say, look, we actually need to work and be concerned more with the provision of services and particularly beefing up the NHS?
I think that they will focus on the latter. They will focus on the NHS and they will attack the Conservatives for being profligate and not actually funding what needs to be funded. So Labour is going to come in very much on protection of the National Treasure, the National Health Service, and that's got to be funded first. So they come in with their proposal for this mansion house tax that will impose a levy on every house worth more than £2 million, which, given the way house prices in London have gone in recent times, of course, hits quite a lot of people.
Quentin, thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's Quentin Peel there, editorial writer with the Financial Times and also a senior research fellow at Chatham House.